Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the committee investigating the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol takes center stage. The group of 7 Democrats and 2 Republicans will begin to lay out what they've discovered about that attack 18 months ago. ABC, NBC, and CBS, along with CNN and MSNBC, will carry the hearing live. NPR senior editor and correspondent Ron Elving says this moment is reminiscent of another watershed event, one that happened nearly half a century ago, the Watergate hearings. Ron is with us to remember back. Hi, Ron.
Good to be with you, Sasha.
Ron, for people who don't know this or didn't live through it, describe the link between January 6th and Watergate.
The common element would be a president trying to hold on to power. In one case, by denying an election defeat, and in the other earlier case, by trying to prevent an election defeat. Now, in the case of President Richard Nixon, his reelection campaign in 1972 had a covert side operation that was breaking into various offices around the country, bugging phones, gathering intelligence on opponents, and trying to disrupt their campaigns. Now, next week, we're marking the 50th anniversary of one particular burglary in that series that gave a name to the overall scandal, Watergate.
Good evening. We have a mystery story out of Washington. 5 people have been arrested and charged with breaking into the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee in the middle of the night.
On June 17, 1972, 5 burglars were arrested inside the office space that had been rented by the Democratic National Committee inside the Watergate complex here in Washington. And it was soon learned that some of those burglars had at least some sort of connection to the Nixon campaign or even to the White House itself.
But Richard Nixon was still reelected.
In a landslide, one of the biggest in history. But not long after he had had his second inauguration, the lid on the Watergate story started coming off. Pretty soon, some of Nixon's top aides were resigning, and eventually, the Senate decided it needed to get to the bottom of it all. Now, Nixon was a Republican, and Democrats controlled Congress, so in 1973, the Senate began a special investigation with a committee of 5 Democrats and 3 Republicans. Now, the chairman was a fellow named Sam Ervin. Most people called him Senator Sam. He liked to call himself an old country lawyer. Of course, he also had a law degree from Harvard. And he kicked off the proceedings on May 17, 1973.
We are beginning these hearings today in an atmosphere of utmost gravity. The questions that have been raised in the wake of the June 17 break-in strike at the very undergirding of our democracy. If the many allegations made to this date are true, then the burglars who broke into the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee at the Watergate were in effect breaking into the home of every citizen of the United States. And if these allegations proved to be true, what they were seeking to steal was not the jewels, money, or other property of American citizens, but something much more valuable, their most precious heritage, the right to vote in a free election.
You mentioned there were 5 Democrats and 3 Republicans on that committee. How did the Republicans on the committee handle things?
The most important Republican on the committee was Howard Baker, a 2-term senator from Tennessee. He was the vice chairman. And in a sense, he became the embodiment of what happened on the panel that summer, starting out as a Nixon defender. But he came to see how wrong Nixon had been, and he asked a question at a key point in the process.
The central question at this point is simply put, what did the president know, and when did he know it?
And what seemed to have turned Howard Baker around?
Certainly one key element was the testimony of John Dean, the young White House attorney who had been supposed to handle the cover-up for Nixon. Nixon had then subsequently fired him. Dean then became what you could call a witness for the prosecution.
John W. Dean III.
Stand up and raise your right hand.
Dean read his 245-page statement into the record over 2 days of riveting live TV.
I began by telling the president that there was a cancer growing on the presidency, and if the cancer was not removed, the president himself would be killed by it. I also told him...
Now, at this point, Nixon and some of his inner circle were still denying everything. It was their word against John Dean's. What happened to change that?
Nixon was weathering the storm, as you say, until a new element was introduced in the 3rd month of the hearings. Fred Thompson, a member of Baker's staff, learned that there had been microphones and recording devices in the White House, including in the Oval Office itself. And that was something that they thought they should question a member of Nixon's staff about in the hearings.
Mr. Butterfield, are you aware of the installation of any listening devices in the Oval Office of the President?
I was aware of listening devices. Yes, sir.
Are you aware of any devices that were installed in the Executive Office Building office of the President?
Yes, sir, at that time.
Ron, are these hearings that began Thursday night expected to have anything like this pivotal a role to play in what happens next in this country's history?
Obviously, we don't know yet. But think how hard it would have been to evaluate the Watergate hearings before we had heard from John Dean or found out about the tapes. We certainly did not know in 1973 that people would still be talking about those hearings 50 years later. Will we be talking about the January 6th attack on the Capitol 50 years from now? A big part of the answer to that question is likely to come from the hearings that begin at 8 o'clock on Thursday night.
That's NPR senior editor and correspondent Ron Elving. Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Sasha.